Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, it's a Bad Hair Day podcast. Here's our theme music. Nice. And we got a great show tonight, everybody. It's going to be like a mini reprise of the Berkeley meetup. We had an RSS Cloud meetup in Berkeley last night, and we had like, how many people would you say we had there? Like 50 people, you think?
Could be.
I think it was 50?
Yeah.
How was all their hair? Did anybody notice? I mean, I thought it was actually Doug. Now, Doug Kay, let me introduce you guys. It's Doug Kay and Joseph Scott, right? And Doug is the founder of IT Conversations and SpokenWords.net. Did I get that right? Or .org. You know, I blew it.
That's right.
And Doug, I almost didn't invite Doug on the show because Doug actually has very good hair.
Not right? At the moment. If you could see it right now, you wouldn't see that.
Really? What is your hair like then when it's bad? I mean, I've never seen a hair out of place on your head in all the years I've known you.
Yeah, but that takes hours and hours of work every day.
I didn't know you were so fussy.
Oh, I'm a very vain person.
I'm sitting new every day.
You know, it's 83 degrees, and I'm here in my pajamas. And
I should have asked, how are you having a bad pajama day or whatever?
No, the pajamas are terrific, but it's the hair that's bad. But I purposely kept it bad for you, so I would fit in with the show.
It's so special. Joseph Scott is from, you're from Salt Lake City, right, Joseph?
Well, yeah, I'm currently from Salt Lake City. I moved there 2 years ago from Sacramento.
Oh, from Sacramento. Interesting. How do you like it? And you work for Automatic, is that correct? Did I pronounce
correct.
That correctly? Yeah.
Got to get that extra T in there.
I know. I wanted to be very, very careful about that because I know Matt is very sensitive about having his name in there correctly. So so you were at our meetup last night, weren't you? You came.
Right.
And we were so happy to have you there and really pleased with your work. I mean, I don't know if people thanked you enough there last night, but I should tell people, Joseph did the WordPress RSS Cloud plugin, which shipped at the beginning of this week. So we were very happy with that.
Hooray!
Yeah. So, how's everybody doing?
Doing great.
Yeah?
Doing great.
So, and how was the meetup for you?
It was
Doug,
good.
You want to start? Dude,
I just like having an excuse to get out of the house.
All right, now we're going to get serious, okay?
Yeah.
I want a serious answer to this.
Serious? No, it was very good. I think,
was it?
You know, because there aren't enough opportunities to get together with people at this stage of a project or protocol or whatever it is that we're doing and exchange ideas and just do it in an open forum like that. So I enjoyed it.
Right. So what was the, I mean, and I'd like to sort of go through both the sort of highlights of what we talked about and also the problems that people talked about, too. And maybe we can sort of talk about how we want to approach those or if we want to even look at those. Joseph, tell us a little bit about what you did with WordPress.
Well, I took a look at what you'd written up as far as a description about RSS Cloud and initially sort of modeled the plugin on some of the diagrams and things that you described there and took a step back and realized that in the case of WordPress, we can kind of skip some of the other details and just take care of it directly and use the knowledge that we know. Okay, we know when things are updating, things like that without having to go to a second server. And that basically...
So you've integrated the cloud server in with the blogging tool, right?
Right. Yeah. What I ended up doing was trying to find the approach that was simplest to get the job done.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of necessarily trying to implement every possible detail.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's the way you do it, right? That's how you do software, right?
At least for the first version.
Yeah.
So that I think has made it easier. I mean, as far as the plugin goes, if you have a regular WordPress blog and you install the plugin, there's no configuration, no options you have to set. You just activate it and it works.
Yeah, I did that. We have a WordPress blog at inberkeley.com, and it was, you know, a matter of installing the plugin and then just enabling it, and it worked the first time. It was one of the, really beautiful, really sweet. So have
Good
you
to hear.
Had any problems with it? I mean, it's been deployed now for, I guess, 3 or 4 days, and it's on WordPress.com, right?
Correct. So all the blogs...
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Well, all the blogs on WordPress.com, when we flipped the switch for that, got it activated automatically.
So have there been any problems? Has your server been able to handle the load?
Load-wise, we haven't had any problems at all. We've had some interoperability issues that people have emailed me about, and you know, worked with you on some of those as well, and got those sorted out. So,
well, those weren't really interop issues. Those were basic brain-dead bugs on my end. I mean,
well, there were a few things that people caught that I needed to fix in the plugin as well. So we've had some back and forth on that.
There's been a lot of concern. I want to go for, like, you know, I'm not trying to, like, I don't want this to be like a PR piece for this, right? So there's been some concern, strong concern expressed by people that that this might not scale. As you said, there haven't been any problems with that so far. Are you concerned about that on WordPress.com or for, you know, standalone WordPress installations?
Not at this point.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a little bit of time before we see this ramp up. So at this point, what people have been talking about is mostly potential scenarios. And on WordPress.com, you know, we log lots of information and details, so we can track things and make adjustments if we find that, you know, our initial technique isn't perfect to the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And
we have a latency. You know, I'll just say this: there will be latency here, and so we'll end up with this situation where, you know, you should just talk right through it. So go for it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, what I was going to say was that it is nice having WordPress.com for those sorts of things, so that, you know, because it's so large and has to deal with those scaling things, you know, when we address it for WordPress.com, then it goes back into the open source plugin, and everybody else benefits from that as well, as well as community patches that come back and fixes that people submit that we can integrate into WordPress.com as well.
I want to mention that there's a brilliantly simple thing that Joseph or somebody over there did, which is this idea that the cloud server, there's a cloud server for every feed, and it's on the same machine or whatever. It's the same place as the feed itself. And that's not something that's obvious. That doesn't have to be done that way, but it sure makes life easy for everybody, I think. Does that something that Joseph, maybe Joseph should explain that and what that means?
Sure. So when I initially looked at this, you know, there's a little diagram that Dave has on rsscloud.org that talks about three components. You have the place where posts or new items for a feed are created. You have a place that manages notifications, some sort of hub, and then you have all of the folks who actually subscribe and want notifications. And actually went back and forth a little bit with this with Matt Mullenweg on, you know, should we just put up some big hub and pipe everything through that, or should we distribute it out? And as I kind of sketched this out in more detail and then took a step back and said, okay, how would I do this just for WordPress, not worrying about a broad generalization? How can I leverage the information that we know inside of WordPress to make this as dead simple as possible? And that steered me to saying, okay, well, the plugin should just handle updates, should handle notification requests, and should handle sending them out. So that's how that evolved into that technique?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's great because, you know, the availability of the cloud is the same as availability of the feed. If you mm-hmm. don't have a feed, you don't have a cloud, and vice versa. So when this rolls out to the code, the download of a code version of WordPress, I think it's going to be great.
Now, my architecture is very different. The way, I mean, I have a handful of feeds that are, you know, cloud-enabled, like scripting.com is cloud-enabled. The feed for this podcast is cloud-enabled. The feed for the Rebooting the News podcast that I do with Jay Rosen. I have two test feeds. I have 1,151 feeds, one for each person that I follow on Twitter, and a few more miscellaneous just floating around out there, feeds. And none of those, so I don't have that architecture that they have on WordPress. So I have a cloud server at rsscloud.org or rpc.rsscloud.org. And actually, that's an open relay. Like, remember how email servers used to have open relays, so mm-hmm. anybody could send email through there. And so this question came up last night. Is like, well, do you think that server is going to handle the load? And my answer is no, I don't think it will, for a few reasons. One is I'm pretty sure that, you know, some of the people out there that seem – I mean, you know, we end up with this. Doug, you and I were talking about this earlier. You end up with people who almost are like lawyers that want to prove that it can't work. And I never imagined that they could possibly come to the conclusion that, oh, that's a good idea. I'm glad they did it that way. You know, it was preordained that they weren't going to like it. And so I expect that we'll have to deal with some of those kinds of things on that server. And so this leads me to sort of a question, well, a guy like me, I mean, I also use WordPress for a few of my sites, and for those, this is great, right, the way that their stuff works. But for the other sites that I have, I'm going to need a service, and I think other people are too. So what I want to see and put on sort of the to-do list of the community is let's get an Apache-type project going. For, you know, the situations where you're not running, you know, some commercial or packaged software, since, you know, WordPress isn't really commercial, but it is, there's a, you know, a big, you know, concentrated effort on it. And so the question is, I guess, how are we going to get something like that going? I don't care what language it runs in. What I care about is that it be set up from the start with the idea that it's going to really minimize the use of machine resources the way Apache does, and that it's going to be maintained by a community so that when, you know, there are security threats and denial of service attacks, that whatever, that the same kind of treatment is applied to this that would be applied to any other community open source project. Oh, that's the other thing. It should be open source. So, you know, one starting point for that is maybe the implementation that you guys have done with WordPress. Since WordPress is open source, is it all conceivable that the cloud server that's in WordPress could be extracted and turned into something like what I just described?
Yeah, I don't see that there's any anything really stopping that.
And what language? It's PHP?
It's in PHP.
PHP, and so you said there's nothing stopping it, but you aren't designing it from this point of view, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it. Like I said, in the end, what happened was my design approach was, what's the simplest path to making this all work?
Of course, and that makes perfect sense. So I want to put that out there. You know, if you have any ideas, Doug, about how we might get a community bootstrap for that, or
not in particular. I mean, it's certainly. There are two ways to look at it. One is that, you know, it's a relatively formal open source project on sourceforge.net or something like that.
Yeah, it should be, I would think.
But the other is, and I don't know the right answer to this, Dave, but, you know, it's not that complicated.
No.
So it might be, you know, it might be a bunch of different people just put, you know, you could have a couple of different PHP scripts and a Python script and a, you know, variety of things that are out there that are downloadable for free.
Right.
You know, the issue is that one thing is that the cloud does require a data store of some kind. So that's the only thing is you've got to wire into your MySQL database or whatever you got, or you could use a file system. Even.
Or Amazon. Yeah,
SimpleDB
might be
yeah.
a good approach for that. Yeah.
So I don't know the answer to, you know, how to bootstrap a project per se. I've never actually done that.
By talking about it on this podcast is one way to get it started or get the idea out there.
Yeah.
That was one of my reasons for
wanting. I think, you know, it's a nice project, and I think somebody, you know, not just somebody, but I think multiple people will look at this and say, hey, you know, I've got a weekend free, I'll knock it out and take it from mm-hmm. there.
Well, this might be a project that the RSS Cloud mail list and Yahoo Groups might pick up, because there are a number of like really good developers there, and I think we're sort of looking for a mission for that mail list. It's an implementer's mail list, and so if anybody listening to this is working in this area, that's a list that you should be on. You should be checking that out.
And mention it's on Yahoo Groups.
I did.
Oh, you did? Okay, sorry.
That's okay. It's worth mentioning twice. So, Doug, let's talk a little bit about what you're doing. So you have did I get it right? It's a podcast aggregator. Would you describe it that way?
As you mentioned, you know, Conversations Network is a nonprofit that has a lot of projects, IT Conversations just being the oldest and perhaps the best known.
Mm-hmm.
But what I've been doing for the last 14 months is writing most of the code for SpokenWord.org, which is we call it a place to find and share podcasts. As you know, Dave, there have been many podcast directories over the years since the first days of podcasting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Most of them are gone. A couple of them still exist, but the granddaddy of podcasting directories, for better or worse, is iTunes. We certainly see that by just looking at the traffic stats to our own podcast.
I wasn't expecting you to say that, but it's kind of funny, actually, because I don't think of it as being like a community resource, right?
Well, it only is in that that's where about 50% of our traffic comes from, if not a little more,
interesting.
To our own shows. So, but the fact is that it's a very closed system. I mean, at the very least, it only supports Apple devices, but there are certainly no APIs to it. And until this week, they didn't support any social networking of any kind and so forth. So SpokenWord.org has a lot of purposes, and I could go into the whole history, which I won't do. But the fact is that we're building an open alternative to the iTunes podcast directory.
Mm-hmm.
And we have so far, I haven't looked at the stats today, but it's around 350,000 individual episodes in the database so far. You know, something like 6,000 or 7,000 feeds, I think, so far that we subscribe to. And so we're in the opposite role of what Joseph and WordPress do. We are not creating podcasts with this service, at least. We're not authoring. We're not running a cloud. We are the aggregator. So it's it makes the show here sort of interesting because we're on the other side of the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the problem, like any other large-scale aggregator, that we have to scan thousands of feeds on some regular basis. Some of these we want to scan. We'd love to scan every 5 minutes, but some of them we can't scan. We don't scan it maybe once a day because we know historically that they don't update. And we actually have some very complicated algorithms to try and figure out when to scan a feed. And like all complicated algorithms, they tend to be wrong. So,
that's funny.
So to us, this, you know, RSS Cloud is a great way to solve that whole problem, which is to say, hey, you know, for as many feeds as possible, we don't want to have to scan them on a regular basis because it costs us a lot of resources. And, you know, wouldn't it be great for something just to ping us when it's updated and we'll go fetch it?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited about the project from that perspective. Now, all I've done so far is first understand it. That took a few minutes, or more than a few minutes. And then I wrote some code to add the parsing to all of our certainly say, all the parsing of our RSS feeds now includes looking for the cloud tag and logging in the database. And that's allowed me to at least, you know, see who's using it and how they're using it and so forth. And the next step, of course, will be to make use of that data and then start requesting notifications from cloud servers.
So one thing that you said that really surprised me was that when you, you know, look at all these cloud elements that you're finding, you're finding all variety of them. There's no, you can't say they're all HTTP posts. They're not all REST calls. There
right.
are XML, RPC, and there's SOAP in
there's
there.
There's even
too.
SOAP, yes.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, who the hell did that? who decided that they were going to use the SOAP protocol, you know, instead of something much simpler? Because, you know, I haven't used SOAP for years, and I have, as I put on my on something in Twitter, I have to go dust off the SOAP libraries and see if they still work.
Yeah, know? And you might not interop too. I mean, the interop in SOAP was pretty
yeah.
elusive.
So, you know, from the point of view of the specification, it's great because if you're an author, you can select any one of three protocols. Actually, you don't select; it's the cloud that selects, and then you just specify which protocol you're going to use.
Mm-hmm.
But you can use any one of three. But as an aggregator, to get full benefit from this, I have to actually implement all three.
Right. So, do you have any scaling issues with RSS Cloud, or is it's strictly upside for you? It actually makes it you scale better now.
Oh yeah, there's other than the coding effort, there's no disadvantage whatsoever.
Right. Once you have the code running, you'll actually have more time for polling for the feeds that don't have clouds because.
Oh yeah, I'll get two benefits. Yes, I will free up server resources for those, and luckily, as I mentioned at the meeting last night, a lot of podcasters use WordPress. And
right.
So. We're going to see, I mean, I can already see how many people are at WordPress.com. What's interesting is, unless I'm mistaken, maybe Joseph can correct me, I couldn't necessarily tell they're at WordPress.com because it looks like they're using CNAMEs. Is that possible, Joseph?
Right. You can do domain mapping for your WordPress.com blog, so you can use any domain. It doesn't have to be .wordpress.com.
Right. So I think that a lot of my feeds are coming in from WordPress.com sites, but they're using domain mapping, so I see it as a different URL.
You know, one thing you mentioned, and it had never occurred to me because I wasn't thinking about iTunes this way, maybe we should get in touch with them and see if they want to also hook into the cloud.
Good.
Yeah.
I mean, they have they don't have the same problem because
Oh, that's right. They don't do the aggregating of the feeds.
Right.
The client, my workstation, does.
That's correct.
Right.
That's correct. And as an aggregator, it has all sorts of problems. Not the least of which is that it does things. And this may be updated recently, but at the very least, it used to default to only downloading one episode a day from any feed.
Really? Wow.
In podcasts.
Well, one of the reasons, you know, I did River 2 was pretty much the same thing you talked about, is that I didn't like the idea that the only way people got podcasts was through iTunes. And, you know, so River 2 is also a podcatcher. And,
right.
And that's coming along nicely. It's also a photography catcher as well. That's a passion of mine. I got access to some incredible flows of pictures, and that's going to be the next thing that I start pushing.
But I just want to finish one thing you were saying.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Which is, yes, it will reduce our server loads. That's nice. And, of course, the extent to which that happens is dependent upon the deployment of RSS Cloud. But in particular, it means that anybody using the cloud is going to get their content onto our site almost instantaneously.
Right.
As opposed to now, you know, if you publish a show every day, we're going to get it up there probably within an hour. But if you publish something on a sort of haphazard schedule, it's going to, it could take a few hours before that appears on our site. And that's simply because, you know, we don't have the money to put a lot of servers out there.
Right. So Well, you're not doing it yet. You have two podcast feeds that have clouds in it, so you know you can get started right away.
That's right. Oh, yeah, I have quite a few. I forget the number, but when I looked in the database,
really,
you know,
no,
yeah, just
great.
Just after one full pass, you know, we collected quite a few cloud tags.
Cool. So I want to mention something quickly that I don't think, my guess is that neither of you have seen this, but I want to alert you to it and anybody who's listening. FriendFeed, I think I mentioned it last night. You know, we were talking about the question of tunneling and how we get the notification from, you know, because RSS Cloud is basically a server-to-server protocol, right? We're going to come back to the IP address thing in a minute, but... And so then the question is, now, if I have, you know, it came up, you know, talking about iTunes on my workstation, you know, how do you get the update information to people who are behind firewalls and NAT? And the way that I like, you know, I have sort of looked at the whole map and haven't made decisions or formed, you know, necessarily, like, you know, I haven't decided yet, I guess is the way to put it, but what I, in terms of what I support, but I'm leaning towards the, in this case, what FriendFeed had. I thought they had a beautiful model for long, what do you call those, long HTTP requests or?
Long polling.
Long polling, yeah. And so, because, and I had only ever seen it from the client side, you know, because I was writing applications that talk to their server, and I was just really impressed with how it performed and how incredibly useful it was. I mean, I had built this thing called the Instant Outliner on top of it, and it just was really, really elegant. Well, today they released their backend as open source.
Huh.
Yeah, and so I go, wow, you know, maybe I could check this off my list because, and they say in the description that, you know, one of the very strong points of this back end that they've released is that it is the other side of the FriendFeed API, and it's now open source. So it may well be the answer, or maybe it may also be a great platform for doing the Apache of RSS Cloud, the thing I was talking about before.
Is long polling just an HTTP GET with a long timeout? Is that what it is?
Yeah, well, it's not with a timeout because you make the request of the server, right, and the connection stays open, and it just pushes, you know, it's as if the page never finishes loading.
Okay, so it's a long connection. I forget what that's called in HTTP, but there's a.
I don't think it has a name. I think it's just a connection that the page, you know, it's a web page that takes forever to finish
right.
displaying. Although in their protocol, I was saying basically I would cut the connection off after a series. You have to allow for the possibility that the connection breaks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because you know the world's imperfect, right?
Yeah, I'm curious when you do that server to server. I'm curious about the resources.
This wouldn't be from
holding,
server to server.
No, but all right. So in the case of client to server. The server
right.
has
right.
to hold
yeah, guys like you and me look at this and say, well, yeah, what about the resources? But these guys came out of Google, okay?
Yeah.
And they wrote Gmail and they wrote Google Maps.
That means that just means they're smart.
Means that they know what they're talking about. You know what I'm saying? It's like
yeah.
these are you know, and I mean Joseph, you go to the same school these guys go to. I mean to me, I don't know about Doug, but to me, what you do is like a black box that I am in awe of, you know? I mean, how do you guys do it? How do you make WordPress.com work?
We have really awesome system administrators.
Mm-hmm.
Is that all there is to it? It's the system.
Well, there's more to it than that, but that's a big part of it.
Yep.
So what makes them so awesome?
We don't know. They just
well, I'm asking him. He knows. He knows these people.
If he knew exactly what they did, he could be one of them.
Doug, be quiet. Let him answer the question.
No, I give complete and total dedication to our very talented folks there who make sure all the systems go.
It's a black box to you too?
And you know what? I'm okay with that. I mean, in past jobs, I've done a mix of system administration and other things, and they do such a good job of it that I'm comfortable not having my fingers in the goo.
Really?
I do the
same
thing.
I write
most of the code, but I have a rule, which is if I ask Tim about doing something and Tim says, don't do that, I don't do it. I don't make changes on the servers unless Tim approves them.
Hmm.
And I've just learned over years, trust Tim. And he
so App Engine is kind of like that, right? I mean, Google's App Engine, they're sort of saying, here, you know, learn how this box works and your apps will scale. So do you work in something similar to that? Is that the environment you work in, Joseph?
As far as philosophy goes, I mean, there's some obvious details that are different there, but if I'm going to do anything that hints at possibly having lots of far-reaching ramifications, I'll ping it off one of our sysadmins first, and if they say that's a really bad idea, you go back and rethink it.
So when you did this plugin, you just sort of the way you conceived of it was, how would I do this for a single WordPress installation? And then you just did it that way. Is that right?
Right. And then I added some extra bits that take advantage of some of the architecture and things that we have on WordPress.com.
Interesting.
But the core plugin runs on the same core plugin runs on WordPress.com.
Yes. I got that. So today I heard back from the guys who do Google Reader. And I'm switching gears here, and I want you both to think about this, okay? So the thing that we talked about last night where the way RSS Cloud handles registrations is the IP address is not a parameter to the request. The IP address that it registers on behalf of the IP address that the request came from, right? So this is a problem for these high throughput, high availability servers. So if you guys, for example, let's say you guys were doing what Google Reader does at automatic, I gather that you would not be able to use this protocol, or would you?
It would not be optimal.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Okay, they said at Google Reader. They said they couldn't do it.
Well, it's an aggregator side thing, and I have the problem, but I can solve it because I'm one guy. But normally I would have communicated with the cloud for registration from a different IP address than the one that receives notification just because of the architecture we have.
Right.
I'm able to work around that. That's not a problem for me, but for a site that's much larger, mm-hmm. I can see the issue.
So for completeness sake, you know, this is something that's in the back of my mind always, and I've never actually said it out loud, but is it possible to lie in the request to change it so that it appears to be coming from a different IP address?
No.
Is that right? Joseph, do you agree?
I basically agree, because the problem is, when you went to go and reply to that, you'd be replying to something different. So,
it
wouldn't work. You'd have issues.
Okay, I don't want issues, but I have them anyway, because it seems to me that at some point, so at the meeting last night, the sort of way I sort of got beyond this with the group was let's take another look at this 6 months from now, okay? In the meantime, we'll write these things up, and we'll study it. And by the time we have to make a decision, we'll understand it, all the ins and outs. And the truth is, right now, we don't understand all the ins and outs. I spent some time today reading specs, reading the RSS 2.0 spec, which really the spec itself doesn't say very much about this, but it points to another document called Soap Meets RSS, I think is what it's called. Pretty sure that's what it's called. But it is, by inclusion, part of the spec. And it really does say that you know, this business about inferring it. So if anybody, and I'm just putting this out there, if you guys have thought about it, or anybody who's listening to this has thought about it, what's the minimal way that we could add another, I hate to say this, but I'll say it out loud, add another parameter here that allows you to say what the not necessarily the IP address, but the domain name of the thing that's going to be responding, that's going to get the notifications. Any thoughts, guys?
There are a couple of ways to do it. I mean, I'm thinking, for example, one of the other things I'm working on right now is, we just finished OpenID, and now we're doing OAuth. And they have similar problems. They have callbacks. You know, that architecture is different because they're exchanging keys. And I think you want to stay away from that if possible.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's,
No, I don't want to go there at all.
Yeah, that's a much more complicated architecture.
Now, I've done OAuth, and OAuth is like two orders of magnitude more complicated.
Yeah.
And
well, I didn't mean OAuth in particular. I meant just something, you know, that style. How do you register a callback safely?
No, well, I think that, let's say, well, Joseph, you wanted to say something, too.
Well, what I was just going to say is that, you know, adding the optional parameter when somebody wants to add a request is fairly simple. It's the other issues that it introduces that are going to add complexity to dealing with it.
Meaning verifying it that you've I'm saying the opposite, that the problem there's no problem. let's say we managed to get past the spec issue, okay? You know, because our claim is, you know, we're implementing RSS 2.0, and that's it. That's what we're doing, right? Okay, but at this point, my guess is that we're no longer implementing RSS 2.0, but we've sort of come up with an addendum to it. And somehow we got past that. I don't see how you have a problem, because all you do is the same thing that you're doing right now. You call that guy and see if he can handle it.
Right.
Now,
that's true.
And if he doesn't have a handler for it, then he won't respond intelligently, right? But I guess the thing I'm worried about now is that, let's say, okay, so I have a machine that's ready to receive notifications on a certain set. I guess you have to make the notification handler a little bit smarter. It has to reject it if it isn't something that it's subscribed to.
Which I think you'd do anyway. I mean, that's
well, my code doesn't at this point, but the walkthrough would have to say that you should do that. And that's
okay.
Easy, right? In other words, so if the handler, you know, if you're subscribed to it and somebody asks if you want to be notified about this thing, well, the answer is yes, right? You're not being spoofed either. You know, nobody's registered anything that you're not interested in.
But, I mean, the code that I'm writing that receives notifications certainly is looking them up and seeing if it's one we really want, and if not, it's, you know, dealing with it.
Yeah.
And the WordPress plugin deals with that too. It only supports allowing people to request notifications for the feed that's on that blog. So if you try and add a request for notification for some other feed,
right.
it just rejects it.
Yeah, but you're not the only guy in the world, right? I mean, there are other servers that will handle notification for systems that are not prepared to do it.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, like, for example, scripting.com, it's not going to have a cloud because it's overkill. It's got one feed on it that... You know, I mean, it's nuts to implement, to maybe it's not so crazy, but it's not the way it's architected right now. It's not running its own cloud server, and I don't plan on having it run one either. I think we may be onto something here. I'm going to try to take a look at this, you know, sometime in the next sort of couple of weeks and see what we can come up with. So.
I mean, again, what Joseph did, you know, your stuff's on Frontier, right, Dave?
Pardon me?
Your code's on Frontier scripting.
OPML editor, which is the same thing.
Okay. So, but, you know, in general, serving a cloud for a single feed or a select set of feeds is the same as serving that feed. It's just another type of request. So a cloud server can become a component of an RSS server.
Interesting. So maybe Apache, maybe we should try to work with the Apache group. Maybe it should be a function of Apache.
Does Apache have an RSS server per se?
Of course it does. Are you kidding? That's how I serve my RSS feeds is through Apache. That's how.
I know you, but how do you generate them?
No, I don't generate them in Apache. But Apache isn't a content management system. So.
Right. But it's just receiving. It's just processing the HTTP request. I mean, in our case, you know, our feeds are generated
but
dynamically.
Think about it, Doug. Isn't the cloud kind of like an HTTP function? Seems to me it is.
Well, yeah, just because HTTP is at a lower level. That's all.
But it is. That's all it's doing is it's doing HTTP.
Right. What I'm saying is Apache doesn't have awareness of RSS. RSS is a level above.
Neither
that.
Does the cloud.
Exactly. All I'm
the
saying
is... The cloud
is,
doesn't know that it's dealing with RSS.
No, I understand that. But I'm saying at some level, wherever your code is that deals with RSS is the same place to put the code that deals with cloud requests.
No. In the case of WordPress, yes. In the case of a lot of other applications, no. The code that does the content management for the podcast for this podcast feed resides on my desktop, and that's where I like it to be.
Well, again, I'm probably wrong, but I can't think off the top of my head of any application services that Apache provides. You know,
you're wrong. Well, you are wrong. Okay,
well, what's an example of one?
Web dev. That's part of Apache. Apache has become, I mean, I don't think it should do all the things that it's doing, okay? It's, you know, the Apache group, but it does a lot of stuff beyond just basic, simple, static HTTP.
Yeah.
Well, it's certainly, I think the idea has been put out there now, okay?
What I'm saying is, I mean, the architecture is, you know, in our case and in Joseph's case, you know, Apache passes on a PHP request to PHP, and it gets to our code.
I see. Okay.
You know.
So maybe
it's not part of Apache per se.
Okay.
It's built into the PHP infrastructure.
Well, of course it would be a module, right? I mean, that's the architecture of Apache.
Well, that's what I'm saying is typically, no, it would be PHP code. It would be a level above Apache.
Okay. Well, let's let this be continued elsewhere because we are now 3 minutes away from the end, 2 minutes away from the end of the podcast. Joseph, you've been really quiet, and which I really appreciate. But if you got any thoughts, I mean, I'm opening the pipe here. Put out you have anything to say?
I think there's some good room for discussion on filling in some of the blanks that might creep up. So I'm interested to see where that's going to go. And as far as WordPress is concerned, I mean, this is one of the many things that are going on. So there's a lot of interest in this sort of real-time delivery and notification. And we're excited to be exploring RSS Cloud and the other things that are going on.
Mm-hmm. I just got the 90-second call. Doug?
Well, I just want to say I wish I were as good a politician as Joseph.
I was just thinking about that, you know. Well, no, he's great. And, you know, we had Joe Hewitt from Facebook was on a couple of weeks ago, and we got really lucky. We got him on the day that he released. He was working on the iPhone app, the Facebook iPhone app.
Right.
And I've known Joe for a number of years, and he's just wonderful. But he's just like Joe here. I mean, he would answer the questions very straight, and he's both these guys, really competent people, but doesn't get off the straight, you know, doesn't deviate a lot. It's just like, you know, they're cool. You know?
You and I are too old, which are deviant.
No, yeah, well, we see we're different types, right?
Anyway, I'm excited by it, too. I think it's
we could have a whole podcast just about this. You know, engineering culture is fascinating, and I think that Automattic is, and Facebook, for that matter, too, are two incredible companies that, you know, that excel and, you know, I mean, I just should say that. It's like they also – I got 10 seconds. I'm not going to be able to say it, but thank you both very much for coming, and look forward to continuing this discussion.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Dave.
Bye, Joseph.